All right, so let's call to order the regular meeting of the North Bend Planning Commission for Thursday, May 26, 2016. First item is to approve our agenda for this evening. Do I have a motion to approve tonight's agenda?
Mr. Chair, I recommend we approve the agenda.
Second.
Okay, so motion by Mr. Ryan and second by Commissioner Lucky. Any changes or comments? Okay, all those in favor of tonight's agenda say aye.
Aye.
Oh, the motion is unanimous. Next item on the agenda is to approve the minutes for April 28th, 2016. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Motion by Commissioner Lucky, second.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Miller. Any comments or changes? All those in favor of approving the minutes for April 28th say aye.
Aye.
The minutes are approved unanimous. Public comment on non-agenda items is item number three. Seeing no one from the public present, we will move on to item number four, which is the introduction to amendments to the North Bend Municipal Code 14.12 floodplain development regulations to address requirements identified by Department of Ecology through community assistance visit. So Mike, if you would give us an introduction.
Great. So all of this relates back ultimately to flood insurance. So I'm really glad that we have an expert with us tonight. Elizabeth Oversleeve, I think, is really a flood insurance expert. And the reason that we are doing this is the city participates in the National Flood Insurance Program, which enables our residents to obtain flood insurance, which is provided by the federal government and not private insurance companies. To participate in the National Flood Insurance Program, we have to meet certain minimum criteria of the National Flood Insurance Program. In addition to that, the city also participates in the community rating system, which is a system by which you can obtain points to lower your community's rating, which then gives insurance payers, flood insurance payers within your community, a discount on their flood insurance premium.
So that you mean the city being?
Not the city as a entity, but the residents within the city who have to pay flood insurance. So what we have done, or the reason this comes up, is we had what's called a community assistance visit that typically happens once every 5 years. And the Department of Ecology acts on behalf of the National, or FEMA, for the National Flood Insurance Program, to come out and review your regulations, to review permitting, your permitting system, projects that have been approved within the last 5 years to ensure that they're conforming to NFIP criteria. So that happened back in February or something. And based on that visit, we had a number of action items that we needed to take to comply. We were given an extension, and our extension now gives us until August 3rd, I believe it is, to complete all these actions. And if we don't do those things, we are considered in violation of the National Flood Insurance Program. And that can be pretty big consequences for our insurance.
So we don't want to go there.
What this particular amendment is for, again, there was a whole range of things that we had to do following the community assistance visit, demonstrating that we've been submitting our tracking floodplain permits, providing what's called habitat assessments for development projects within the floodplain, ensuring compliance with ESA, Endangered Species Act requirements, a number of other things. But one of those things that we had to do is to update our floodplain regulations to meet certain things that they identified. So that's what we have here. To provide additional context, these are just things that were identified by the Department of Ecology. But coming up in August, we'll have what's called the five-year cycle update, which is directly from FEMA rather than from the Department of Ecology. And that process will identify additional things that we need to do to participate, not in just the National Flood Insurance Program, but in the community rating system. So we will be coming back with more amendments that we'll be bringing to you. And for this purpose, because we have this deadline of August 3rd, we want to just be able to take what Department of Ecology gave us and bring those forward without we don't want to broaden this out too much right now because of the deadline. So as we work through our amendments, we want to take your comments, but we want to just put them aside and say, we'll keep track of these, we'll come back to these when we do our more major amendment. That said, what the amendments are fairly minor.
Question.
Yeah.
This is a 5-year review period. Mm-hmm. So we just had that 5-year review. But during the previous 5 years, does DOE and others promulgate floodplain regulations, do they issue updates that we as a city have to pay attention to, or, yeah, or do we just wait every 5 years and update it then?
No, we do have to pay attention to those things. And that's also what we have to do with the community rating system. I believe that there's amendments that happen to that we need to also be aware of. And
so all these amendments are things we didn't do in the last 5 years?
Things that we didn't do or things that have changed since.
Well, that's what I mean. But during that 5-year period, we at some point got word of these changes and we just didn't do it, or?
That's what this process is
might
for.
Might I have missed something?
Yeah.
If it's not mm-hmm. the term. A lot of what we're seeing right now has actually just come about recently. As FEMA and the National Flood Insurance Program put into place different portions of the Biggert Waters Flood Insurance Reform Act of 2012 and the follow-on Homeowners Flood Insurance Affordability Act of 2014. They have been slowly going through, and it's not a process to make all of those changes. It is actually an almost daily download of new interpretations. So this has been kind of a continual update that I would say has been heaviest in the last year. There's a lot that came through on the FIA that modified Biggert Waters. So there's this rollout of things. This is not something that necessarily we would have been ignoring. It is literally that they have been deciding how to apply much of the direction they received through those two pieces of legislation. So what we're really seeing is that we're at a point that there are things that we do need to do related to that, but it's not necessarily something that we had in a completed form of this is what you need to do until this point.
My concern was, and that's the question, was that we were approving permits to build within the community over the last 5 years when we had regulations that had already been in effect during that time, but that's not the case.
It becomes problematic from the perspective of the flood insurance side because they often apply those rules retroactively. But there is nothing that we would have been able to do up until this point until they gave direction. It's just that they will on occasion look at some of those and say that this is what the Congress wanted to do, this is what the rule was, this is the date 2012, if it was something from that, 2014, if it was something like that. So there can be issues, but typically if you can document, there are ways to get that done. It's not, again, this is something where they have been developing what the full interpretation of a number of these statutes mean.
Like Mike, for sure, like all of us, we don't want to have our plan interrupted by a moratorium until we get all this stuff taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any, I always have the same sort of questions when we are, as you put it, going to do something that feds have laid on us.
Yeah.
My question is, what if we don't?
That's a
what's
very,
the, what's
very
the real
danger.
Answer?
Can
what does
I,
that mean?
Can I speak to this? Well, there are two different levels. If we don't do what we need to do to maintain the community rating system discount that City of North Bend currently has, you could, in effect, result in an additional 20% increase on the next renewal for every person with flood insurance within the city.
So
that's the minor one.
That's the minor one.
Okay.
The big one, and this might actually make more sense on the from the real estate end, if it gets to a point that they decide the City of North Bend is not being compliant, they can put us on probation, or they can yank our eligibility for flood insurance within the city, which means no flood insurance policy renewal or new policy can be issued because we're no longer participants in the program.
No FEMA policy.
no FEMA policy, and right now there is not a robust private market, and there's no guarantee. Well, there is some stuff going on that will, at the congressional level right now, we're still waiting to see how it's going to play out, where they're making some changes to encourage private participation in that market. There's no guarantee they would offer policies to every property. They're going to cherry pick basically what's best, for profit.
So you sell insurance. Mm-hmm. If a customer comes to you and says, I'm an area of whatever the rating would be where mm-hmm. FEMA doesn't even cover them.
Right.
Can you get flood insurance?
No. Not right now. Depending on the risk, you might be able to get what's called the difference in conditions policy. It covers earthquake, landslide, flood typically. That's done through Lloyd's of London. But they are less likely to do that in an area where the risk is completely unknown than in an area that has an existing flood map. And right now they typically won't do it in an area, a special flood hazard area.
One of the things I reflect back on, everybody goes back where they've known, mm-hmm. and spent a bunch of time and have a lot of roots in Florida.
Right.
So, strangely enough, people build on the coast all the time. Mm-hmm. The hazard there, of course, is hurricanes.
Right.
But it's still a flood, mm-hmm. and lots of homes are built on stilts that could be 15, mm-hmm. as much as 25 mm-hmm. feet above the ground. And you pay for elevation of your structure mm-hmm. to get to a lower rate mm-hmm. for storm right. coverage. But I'm just looking at that thinking, okay, FEMA's, we've probably got a group of four or five, quote, highly educated government employees coming out, laying out their interpretation of legislation that happened in D.C., along with a map that's satellite related, and there's here's the line. Mm-hmm. And if you don't follow what we say, we're going to, as you say, yank your coverage. Mm-hmm. I got to believe there's a private entity out there who say, you know, I can see your elevation here, and there hadn't been a flood in 100 years or whatever the scenario.
It's not there right now. It's not there right now, and there's no guarantee that they would write everyone. You could end up in situations where someone cannot sell their property because
right.
the mortgage company wants to have flood insurance on
right.
the structure, and they cannot obtain it. It would be a case-by-case basis, and it leaves it up to the whims of private enterprise on whether or not they would write it or not.
Well, see, now you're talking my language.
Okay.
That's where I always run into this. It's like, okay, yeah. we go this way, or we let people take care of themselves. It's
you
a catch-22. I got it.
Right.
I know.
And right now there's a lot of change going on that, and we
yep.
may see more private enterprise in the area. But for the purposes of the CRS, there's the two levels. They don't suspend the flood insurance for a community. They usually put them on probation first.
Yeah.
But it has pretty significant impacts where, you know, people would be in default with one of the requirements on their loans because when their policies come up for renewal in a community where it has been revoked, that policy.
Has that ever happened, you know? Has that ever been?
Oh, yeah.
The communities had
it
revoked?
No. Oh, yeah.
Other than Louisiana where?
Oh, no. Yeah, there's a list.
Really?
Yeah. It's happened, and in some communities it's been a non-issue because there are very few properties impacted because it's out in the county in the middle of nowhere, basically.
Right.
But
Elizabeth, I just want to interrupt right
yeah.
there. Mike, can you tell us what our rating is mm-hmm. and how that relates to the scale overall, where we fall?
We are a Class 6 community,
mm-hmm.
and we are one rating under Snoqualmie for comparison.
Mm-hmm.
They're a class 5. King County is a class 2. And I understand that King County
one
is the highest.
There's one of two communities in the nation that have qualified at that level.
And so the lower number is the better,
yeah.
or better as in the eyes of FEMA, as mm-hmm. in better development regulations.
Yeah. When you get to the level of a King County, though, at a class 2,
mm-hmm.
that's really beyond something that a city
right.
would want to do in our context, because that's where you're talking about not allowing any development in the floodplain.
Yeah.
Well, I think,
it's also a financial issue.
That gives us just an indication of where our city is now, whether we're heavy on regulation or light on regulation, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But,
And I think the only other number that qualifies you for a discount is one above where North Bend is. To give you a kind of perspective on that, North Bend, at the number that it's at now, it's a 20% discount on flood insurance. City of Snoqualmie, it's 25%. King County is a 40% discount.
Wow.
Okay.
King County meaning city of Seattle?
No, unincorporated King County. In unincorporated King County, the CRS discount equates to 40% off of premium. That's a huge amount.
I'm only confused because city versus county.
Mm-hmm.
You would think logic says the city is better situated to manage that than the outlying areas.
There, it's because of what King County has done. And to come back to the comment that was made about it, it's just not something the city can do. To get that level, you essentially have to have what they have, rivers and floodplains. They have that department that is dedicated to issues like this.
Right.
It's simply something that's beyond the financial capabilities of most small cities. It's actually even beyond the financial capabilities of the city of Seattle, aside from the fact that they kind of dismiss their flood risk because they don't have the same types of risk
right. That
we do. So it's not as important for them to do.
So, Mike, I know you're going to get to the specific amendments here, but kind of this conversation is bringing up, I haven't seen a floodplain map for North Bend. So what are we
around here?
Is this like, is the King County IMAP representative of that?
That's actually an interesting one. So
this is our floodplain map. April 19th, 2005, and FEMA is in the process of updating the map, but that's taking forever. So
and if you're curious about what that updated map looks like, the King County has it loaded on their website. If you go on there and just in their search bar, you pull the area flood map, you can pull them up by the panels.
Mike, can you give us like the orientation on the colors?
Kind of digitizing everything.
Sorry, this is a smaller map. This doesn't have the entire city in it. This is focused on the downtown area, but this is where most of the floodplain is anyway. So if you see the pink, the salmon color,
mm-hmm.
that is the floodway, which our code does not allow new residential or commercial development in.
Does the hotel fall into that?
No.
Okay.
The hotel sits just outside the floodway, right here. And the blue is the 100-year floodplain. And there's different zones within the floodplain relating to the flood depth. So this is the AE zone, which means that the flood depths are mapped. So you can see like there's 438, 440, 441. So that's a presumed, or a mapped depth of the 100-year flood. And when you go to elevate your home per our flood regulations, we require that you elevate 2 feet above the flood depth mapped. So that's the AE zone. We also have some special flood zones in our downtown area, and those are the AO zones, and those are based on ground grade to presume the flood depth. So we have our AO1 zone, which means the flood depth is presumed to be 1 foot above the existing ground grade. AO2, 2 feet above. AO3, three feet above.
So does that height of the house, then does that get them out of the requirement of flood insurance then?
Mm-mm.
No.
So all those homes have flood insurance?
Yeah. If you live in the floodplain and you have a mortgage, you
have flood insurance.
One of the things that it doesn't pick out, Silver Creek has an increasing number of LOMAs
mm-hmm.
being issued, letter of map amendment, and that's where they've gone in and had a surveyor specifically measure it. If the land elevation is above the base flood elevation, they can submit an application to FEMA to get a letter of map amendment, mm-hmm. and when that happens, removes the requirement to carry flood insurance, and also it makes them eligible for a less expensive policy if they want to continue to carry it. So there's that map doesn't always give a full picture of what's going on the ground. I think another kind of interesting point is that when you look at that AO zone in the middle of the city, before the map update, I think it was actually the one right before this one, most of Silver Creek was AO zone. So sometimes that they leave it at that because it's an area where the water is expected to pool.
Mm-hmm.
Other times it is like a preliminary one that they put it in because they haven't done the full mapping. And then you later see those move into AE, which actually might be a good thing for downtown if they ever get around to doing that, based on what we're seeing in terms of the specific ECs where some houses really shouldn't be reflected as being in the high risk area.
Okay. comment that I've been researching my own little street in Old Silver Creek. One of my neighbors who's lived there for 50 years, 2.5 acres, basically told me a story recently where the street, Sixth Street in front of my house, basically fell apart, bailed, and underneath it, about 10 feet underneath, was water, part of the river. So he took stumps and rebar, anything he could find, and threw it into the ground, and they covered it up. So there is water really close to the surface here. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know that directly, but
the groundwater, it varies considerably.
Yeah. Yeah, it was bubbling up at some point in the 70s.
So. It happens. I think it has to do with the, what is it, glacial moraine that we sit on.
Yeah.
It all comes up.
Mm-hmm.
We're one of the few people who have basements in Silver Creek in our house, because my grandparents came from Minnesota, where you put in root cellars.
Yeah.
It seemed like a good idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it is useless, because when the water table is up, there is water in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some pump through that season that has to be in there.
Mm-hmm.
And in the long run, I think our family and my dad convinced that we're going to be filling that thing in. But, yeah, the water table is always in. You can see that in the area around E.J. Roberts Park as well. As that water starts to come up, a lot of that is coming up from as a water table.
So, Jim, back to you and your question. Are you
the place I'm going, again, it's easy for me to go back here because I'm always saying, okay, what's the private landowner going to do with this detail that we're supposedly evaluating on their behalf? If I were in the room as a landowner, or I had my house, Silver Creek, or wherever, and there's decisions being made that affect my cost of being here, it'd be nice to know I had an option. One of the options is you got a ridiculously high premium related to flood insurance. Another option is we go down the road that we're being asked to go down and comply in all fashions, including no more 200 square foot shops in the backyard without a permit. That got my attention. Really?
Definitely got our attention as well.
Yeah, it's indicative of the tone of the whole concept. It's really easy for an insurance provider to tell you can't live a normal life or not get insurance. That's the dance that they always do because it takes the risk off of them. So I'm always kind of pushing back. I realize the insurer is in essence the taxpayer. I get that dance. I just don't know if there's going to be the dialogue because they're not here.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of want to stand up for that.
One of the important things to realize is that it's not necessarily the National Flood Insurance Program or FEMA. They are reacting to directives from Congress.
Sure.
This is all coming out of that flood insurance reform legislation that started with Bigger Waters, and then HFIA, when people went, what are you guys doing with Bigger Waters? Because it was going to, we would be in a much different place right now had Bigger Waters rolled out the way that they had intended.
Right.
I don't think any homes in the special flood hazard area would be selling right now had Bigger Waters rolled out the way that they intended. And a lot of these things are coming from them of, we don't want people, we want to know what's going on. So this isn't necessarily even the NAP, it's not the National Flood Insurance Program, and it's not FEMA itself. It is them doing what they've been told to do by
just so I have a number.
People in D.C.
Just so I have a number referencing $500,000 single-family home,
mm-hmm.
given neighborhood here in North Bend, mm-hmm. what's their probable monthly insurance premium?
It depends on so many factors. Subgrade crawl space, is it elevated?
Is it 1,000 or is it 4,000?
Monthly.
Sorry, not monthly, annual.
Annual.
Annual. It can run anywhere from $350 a year to one that I had recently that was going to be $4,700.
Okay.
And
I have a $2 rider on my.
And
say again?
$200 rider on my insurance, flood insurance.
Rider.
Okay. I'm a writer, home insurance. I tack on
right.
$200 more. I live right on the river.
So that helps always when you're trying to decide what makes sense is what are we actually arguing over? And it sounds like we're arguing over 20% of at least maximum 20% of $5,000 a year.
But
right?
Some of those homes are not full risk rated yet.
And this isn't the 20%. This isn't the discount issue. This is the conformance to the National.
This is a, we can't get it all issues. There's two things.
So Jim touched on 200 square foot outbuildings, and my question is it firm on minimum 200, or can we set a higher minimum? Because, a small building like that doesn't seem it's a value of consequence of worthiness of insurance anyway. I mean, it's your tractor,
not about
your lawnmower.
But their concern is about impacts to flooding. Mm-hmm. So I would agree that...
Impacts as in, like, you store fuel out there? You
store
have
fuel, or that the building could become dislodged during a flood and cause damage to somebody else's property.
Right. So they want to ensure it's permitted so that it doesn't become a further risk in a flood event? Okay. So I get that.
It's got water in it?
Well, okay.
It floats into the house somehow without water?
If we could have one conversation, I just want to make sure what Mike was explaining was that a permit ensures it's built to a certain standard so it doesn't become dislodged in a flood event and cause further damage to other structures. So I can accept that argument.
What about the fir tree that went by at 30 knots?
That's natural.
All right.
It's about what you can control. And a structure... A structure that's put up without any guidance, that is not anchored, is placed in a special pasture area, particularly in an area that might be subject to higher velocity flood water, can become the battering ram that takes down somebody's house in a flood event.
Hazard.
Yeah. You know, the trees are trees, and trust me, I actually have a story about a tree that came down, that took down an entire house in a flood. But a shed is a risk to people and to property when it gets to that size. And if it's not properly anchored and can float, there's an issue. But it's actually, on this one, it's because it's what they're saying you have to do, and if you don't do it, what we're doing right now, and I guess my thought when I was reading this in the first place is, this is triage. This is what we have to do to protect the city staying in the program.
Right.
Forget CRS. You know, the CRS falls where it will when they do the questionnaire. And they are getting a lot stricter about what they want to see to get those credits. But this is about people being able to sell their homes, people not having problems with their mortgages, because the city has had its participation in an FIP revoked.
What, another question for kind of focusing on this, because I've had a little bit of experience with flood insurance.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot like earthquake insurance in the fact that they give you this wonderful number of your coverage is $250,000.
That's the max, yeah.
And it is a max. Mm-hmm. If you have $500,000 worth of property that's destroyed, well, you're only covered for half of your $5,000 a year premium.
Unless you buy the excess flood policy that's through private markets.
I guess what I'm getting to is that there's a suggestion that people will hear when they say they have, gosh, we should do this, we have to sign up for all of this program, and the overlay from the Department of Ecology, they agree to this, because if we don't, we can't get flood insurance. I'm focusing on, okay, we've already figured out kind of what the premiums are that people are paying, but the other piece that's not mentioned is, what's the coverage really? And I'd argue with $25,000 deductibles on things.
Not on homes.
On per property, which is what's lost in a flood. The home's still standing, needs mm-hmm. to be redone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's not just the insurance, it's the ability to get a mortgage.
Right, yeah, and that's the kicker, because this is not something, mortgage lenders cannot place a loan on a home in the special flood hazard area that without having flood insurance in place, flat out.
Is that a percentage? Or you're saying I couldn't get a 50% loan?
Unless you're going to find some private individual who will loan you the money without you having to have flood insurance. But anyone that any major lenders that are receiving any sort of federal funding.
Fannie Mae money. Yes,
exactly.
Back to the feds again. Sorry.
No.
I worked for a private mortgage company that sold them on the market.
Yeah.
Same thing. If you were in a flood hazard area, if you were an earthquake area, if you were in a fire hazard area, you had to have the additional insurance in order to get the loan.
And Jim, the insurance only covers the first floor.
Right.
You don't get the second floor. Yes, you can't insure the second floor. Interesting.
So you got to put your gold in the basement.
Insurance company will not give you flood insurance for the second level.
Yeah.
No, that's not correct, actually.
I can't buy it.
Well.
You need to talk to Elizabeth.
That's a separate discussion for another time after a meeting.
But when I hear that, I go, what?
Let me give him a card.
Well, I'll tell you what to tell your agent because that's a different deal. But
so I'll rest my case and just say the final note. Every time our small city and its citizens are asked to just sign up for stuff that came from on high, I'm going to be standing there going, hang on a minute, let's study this. Not just, okay, let's write it in the code and move on. That's not the way I want to run.
Okay. Can I add something?
Sure.
So we have a neighboring county that's an example. So Kittitas County, their initial flood insurance rate map was adopted, and for whatever reason, the county elected officials decided not to adopt the necessary floodplain management standards, which would have required homes be reviewed and constructed elevated. The end result of that is a lot of people who built houses after the flood insurance rate maps went out, who did not build them compliant with the map that was in effect. Now, when they go to sell those properties, they're looking at premiums as a non-compliant post-firm structure that can be in excess of $10,000 a year. That is the impact of the community failing to address these issues. You can ignore them and you can throw it out the window, but there is a direct impact on members of the community if that happens. Because if it's allowed to occur and it's considered non-compliant later with those maps, they're kind of stuck. And there's more than one person who wanted to get like a reverse mortgage who instead ended up with a house they couldn't get a loan on because they were going to be paying, you know, $8,000 a year for the flood insurance that they would have to comply with that loan.
So that's a telling point. I wonder how many of those people have a legitimate lawsuit against the city for that purpose.
Not the city. The city here has been doing good. But I have no idea what they're doing over there on it.
Yeah. Because that would be the telling truth.
So you have, they did not really get that taken care of until the mid-90s. So you had homes being built for close to 15 years without there being the necessary requirements to elevate. Now, some of them accidentally got where they needed to be just because we built up on crawl spaces, that kind of thing. But there are a lot of them over there.
Well, thank you for that.
Before
we go on, I just want to check with Mike. Were you able to finish your introduction? Because I know we kind of started with quite a bit.
I wanted to get covered before we get into the code because there's still things on the introductory page that I have questions about. And I'm just wondering if this is up on Roman numeral 4, page 3. It seems like country compatibility controls the handle that in that first sentence where it ends in evaluated for compliance with Norpin municipal code, it seems like this should be in compliance with FEMA code. Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
So should that is that a typo or what?
No, what the particular section of the code amendments provision in our code talks about is it has to also be compliant with other sections of our code. So it is true it has to be compliant with the broader National Flood Insurance Program criteria, but this was just asking is it compliant with our own code. So it's amending our code and there's not other inconsistencies with other sections of our code.
Okay, so this is written out so it's after the fact.
Say again?
This is written so it is after the fact. In other words, right now we're not in compliance with
We are in compliance with our own code.
Okay. Doesn't that go without saying?
Not always. There's other provisions. You know, when you're doing zoning amendments, for example, you can be creating lot sizes that are inconsistent with the purpose of the zone or things like that.
The last one is on the paragraph or paragraph, item four under findings, under summary findings, it talks about a meeting held in June 9th, 2016. That's not here yet.
And that will be the public hearing.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, I saw that. It confused me a little bit, but it's someone just getting ahead of themselves a little bit, I think.
I'm just preparing the staff report. So you guys won't sign the staff report until you've, or we won't, and the commission chair won't sign the staff report until you've made your recommendation, and this is just in preparation for that.
But I will, you know, ask that the planning commission, when you see these things, this is our opportunity when we have findings or additions that, you know, we want in the planning commission's report, this is exactly where we would put those, okay? So when we do our additional research and we have facts or things that we brought to the table that help implement a decision, then those are the places where they go. So it's a good thing to know what's in there now and know what should be needed for attitude. That's the way I use it. Okay.
So the amendments, unfortunately, in this case, are not, other than the shed thing, are not really changing what we do in terms of regulating development. It's a lot of just procedure on how we're doing things internally as a city, how we're reporting things, or we're reorganizing some things just for the sake of clarity. We had to add a severability clause, make a reference to our current regulatory flood map. And then the sheds. So we remove the exemption for structures under 200 square feet, which currently, if they don't require a building permit, which is the 200 square foot threshold, we have, our code says, then you don't have to get a floodplain permit either. FEMA is saying, no, you still need to get a floodplain permit, even if it's a building permit.
So, Mike,
what's a floodplain permit? Mm-hmm.
Floodplain permit is a development permit that we review a development against our floodplain regulations to ensure.
What would be a probable cost for that permit for that person who wants to put in the garbage?
$154.
$154?
Mm-hmm. Okay. For an individual structure. When you're doing a development as a whole, it's on a developer deposit basis. So it's paying staff time. But for individual building permits, it's $154.
Okay.
So the existing sheds, they're going to be reconsidered? Or they
no, anything existing is grandfathered. So this would be just...
So if it's already been purchased at Home Depot for $500, you won't have to pay the extra $150 to put it in your backyard.
Yeah.
In areas where we have to elevate structures, will a shed have to be elevated now that it'll be permitted?
Or vented.
Vented.
The more likely scenario.
It'll be the outline of why it's funny.
There are going to be certain design standards so that you can't go just to some of these pre-built metal sheds.
You won't be able to because of the requirements. You have to amend it so much that it would cost more to do it that way than to just make it your... Mm-hmm. You have to have the venting requirements. You have to ensure the anchoring of the foundation.
Mm-hmm. What happens with the mobile home parks?
Oh, yeah, those are existing. If you build a new local home, or if you want to locate a new manufactured home, it needs to meet floodplain requirements. The anchor has to have foundation.
I thought some of them were elevated.
Elevated, yeah, they would have to be elevated.
Are those requirements part of the federal requirements?
Yes.
Is that, and that's what NorthBend adopts, as far as building structures and such. Mm-hmm. Is that something we look at?
Mike, what's that chapter that we did, flood something, that talks about all the elevations?
Oh, the comp plan, are you talking about? Or
I don't know if it was in the comp plan or what section Jamie did it.
Management plan, mm-hmm. And we did update that 3 years ago, I believe. Mm-hmm. It's a very big plan.
I'm just saying, so the point of reference
that's what I was wondering.
That's going to have all the elevations based on what zone and what area you're in.
Well, the flood elevations, is that what you're talking about?
That's the building heights. But
kind of the design.
But those are Yeah, so if it comes from FINA, though, we adopted something in our city, and that's what the design standards are, right?
We've adopted the flood insurance rate map, which establishes flood elevations. Beyond that, the elevation requirements that the city's adopted, the 2 feet above, we don't have to do 2 feet above. The base criteria under the National Flood Insurance Program is the base flood elevation. We, under the community rating system, we've gone to 2 feet above, which gives us additional credit to lower insurance premiums. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm just looking to see who's going. I just want to say on page 3, Mike, point B, under the, well, it's the second from the bottom, there's a will be there, but I thought, aren't we maintaining some of these records now? So I'm just going to ask as a whole, think about what we're doing now, and if we are doing it, then change will be to R.
I'm sorry, I'm not.
Point B on page 3.
Three of the regulations, okay.
Yeah. It's the second line from the bottom. There's a documents will be maintained by the city. And I know that we maintain some documents, so I don't know.
Yeah, we could change that to R.
And just in some of this.
Or shall be. It should, as a regulation, it should say shall be.
Dick, you want to go?
No, I've actually, all the red line, I'm on board with. Okay. It's just, this introduction is a little confusing to me. Well, these look like, I happened to catch Jenna at the chamber lunch the other day, and she let me understand what you were saying, Mike, too, about what we're doing here is not correcting our mistakes, but catching up to the code as has been coming added to for the last 5 years. I thought that we had been really naughty boys and girls for all the red we have going on here, but evidently we don't have to change our code as it is promulgated during the 5 year period. We just have to be
ensuring that we're in compliance.
In compliance at that 5 year yeah. CAF.
And these are really very minor updates.
Yeah, they are. They are. So, you know,
since you're on that page, I made a note as a question. If you think about the storage facilities, RV storage, campers are sitting in the parking lots, mm-hmm. giving monthly rent. I argue many of them might be there for more than 6 months at a time, which crosses the 180-day threshold. Now do we have a permit to store a vehicle? Is that how this works?
Well, we're not going to be chasing after things.
I'm just saying that landowner who's got a bunch of storage vehicles is going to be having to be compliant with this, right? The storage purveyor, if he's got structures on his property, under whatever the circumstances are, is he going to have to
qualify? Well, if a vehicle also, if it's licensed and operable, is not subject to these requirements.
But any kind of RV, a towable device, would be that under the setting, right?
Not if it's licensed.
Like a license plate licensed, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I'll go with that.
A storage area up there on North Bend Way and Tanner, that's above the floodway for sure.
Yeah.
Anything further on the edits?
Scott? Just a general question here. I guess I wasn't clear on the change, the requirements from ecology and the requirements from whatever later. So what are we really talking about?
So the Department of Ecology in doing this community assistance visit is looking at the minimum criteria under the National Flood Insurance Program. When FEMA comes later to look at our 5-year cycle update for the community rating system, that's looking at what our classification is for things that we're doing above the minimum criteria to see if we're still going to be at a 6 with the updates from that program.
So is there, I guess, a summary of what ecology, I see a lot of information, but is there a summary of what ecology wants us to change?
I can provide you with the letter if you want to see the letter.
Well, I mean, is it all in here?
All the amendments are in here, and Ecology's already actually reviewed these amendments and said, yeah, that looks good.
Because, I mean, I just, you know, I mean, in the introduction I read about the following provides a summary of the major changes to the chapter on page one. I mean, is that the way it was organized? I just didn't understand the specific things they were focused on.
The Department of Ecology was focused on?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they provided us with, in the letter, things that we needed to amend in our regulations. And plug those in, and that's what you see in the red line format.
And is that basically on page one, starting that list of one through six? Is that your summary?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Always helps to hear some of this in person.
So one thing I didn't mention is we have hired a consultant, Pertit, and then in particular, what's her name?
Hard name to remember.
I apologize. Christina Woolman from Pertit. And she is a floodplain manager, certified floodplain manager. And she's coordinating this effort, and she'll also be coordinating our update to our community community rating system amendments. So it's really good to have her on board because she's a lot more familiar with NFIP requirements than what I am or what other staff at the city are.
And actually, to that point, one of the reasons that communities like King County have those is that they have a CFM on staff all the time. One of the individuals that works with them has the qualifications. And that ends up filtering through to actually hiring someone as you're looking for North Bend when they're taken off, that you are running these things through a CFM. It's a good thing.
Do you know what she costs?
I would imagine her rate is typical for a consultant, $150 an hour or something like that.
But I mean, to kind of work with us through this, is it a year-long process or just a...
The city is looking to have her as a permanent consultant because we have many more obligations than just this update.
Right, I don't know if Petit's been done a bunch of stuff, right? They've done a bunch of things.
Yeah, but in terms of floodplain as well, floodplain management, we have a lot of things beyond just regulations that we have to do that the staff are overwhelmed with just development review, and so we're not able to take that on. Mm-hmm. So rather than hire a specific staff person, we're hiring a consultant.
Right, makes sense. Mike, do we look at downtown Snoqualmie's regulations and look at ours and see if they're compatible anyway? Are we learning from what they've done, what they're doing? I know it's different with geographic issues, but I mean, they're a rating 5. Would we be interested in looking at what they're doing that might help our rating?
We can consider what we would need to do to get to a rating 5. And that's when we'll enter that discussion in August or so.
Can I tell you about 100 feet higher than we are in general? We're not the city, I guess.
They're downtown.
Their flood depth is higher.
Well, when you say Snoqualmie, are you talking about the ridge? Or
I'm talking about downtown Snoqualmie. Mm-hmm. The regulations they have in place, if they're similar to ours, if we're...
They do some things that ours are actually more stringent on. They allow development in the floodway, which we don't.
Yeah.
So everybody's got their own context and has to consider what's appropriate for them.
They also have a larger area of the city that's located within floodway than North Bend does. Well, we have lots of special flood hazard area. The actual areas of floodway are relatively small.
Well, I don't like colleagues on the board. I have an old story about that, but I'm not going to waste your time with it.
Okay.
About the floodway.
One of these days, I might have to talk about the original FIS study for that area and some of the interesting things in the government archives about letters from
where. So, Mike, next steps, we're going to have a public hearing next meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then you mentioned some broader updates. This is our municipal code. Are we going to be looking at the flood part of the comprehensive plan in addition, so we're bringing both up to compliance?
We may need to. I don't know at this point.
So we're...
Our flood regulations, we have, or our flood plain section, or critical areas element, we updated last year with our comprehensive plan update. There's also the floodplain development plan, which is a much more comprehensive thing that we updated 3 years ago. I don't yet know if we'll need to do updates to that.
Well, if there's a desire by some of the commissioners that want to look at what we can do to improve our rating, where best are we going to be looking at those sections, I guess, to prepare for that?
If you want to look at that, it's available on our website. It's under Public Works and then Floodplains.
And if they already have a CFM who's taking a look at this situation as a whole in preparation for the CRS, I'm certain that some of her recommendations will relate to that. There have been a number of changes since 2012. Most of them didn't start rolling out, though, for about 6 months after that July date that they passed it.
So I'll ask this. Is it the desire of this commission that we would like to have the staff request the consultant identify opportunities to improve the city's rating?
It seems axiomatic, but I wondered, you know, what would it get us and what would it take
away
from us?
I think before you make a recommendation like that, you want to consider, you want to hear what that would mean.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I'm just
positives and negatives.
I'm just saying, do we want those identified? So she's just going to say, here's the minimum, or she can also say, here's the minimum, and here's what you can do to increase your rating. I'm looking to see both things, I think. To know what the difference is. Because if we're talking about, well, you're at 2 feet, if you went 2.5 feet, you know, I don't know if that's just the minor thing. I don't know what it is. So,
just as well, a point that, which I would know as well, King County has long, or about 3 years now, been requiring 3D. And most of the homes that, well, in Snoqualmie, they usually typically go higher, maybe for that full story, but it is a minimum 3 foot that they've been doing with the projects that King County's been administering. Well, that's, I don't know that Snoqualmie has actually adopted that officially into their code.
So to your point, yes, our consultant will be looking at what we would need to do to either maintain a 6 or to go to a 5. From what I've understood before, and I'm no expert at this, would be new to me as well, but I've heard before that it's not just a matter of going to 3 feet, that we would have so many things that we'd have to do to get to a 5 that it may not be worth it.
There can be, if you're really curious, the CRS information is available on the FEMA website. You can read through what they look at. It's very, very complex, though. Because there's a lot that goes into it, and it isn't exactly, it's not just about taking it to 3 feet. And the 3 feet, really, in the perspective of what it does for an individual homeowner or property owner, it saves them a little bit on premium, but it's we're not talking thousands of dollars, unless they, you know, in terms of the difference, it might be $100 difference from someone who goes to 2 feet.
Well, there's obviously a big difference between what King County is doing and what we're doing, but somewhere in there, there is a look at what is the safe building practices. There's also density, and so I want to understand what are the opportunities, what can we do that doesn't increase building costs, but...
And Mr. Chair, I think we just passed some ordinances a couple meetings ago about electrical power lines. It seems to me that anything that's in a floodway will be above ground, and probably should be noted to that. No?
They're not necessarily above ground. If you look at the project that they just did in downtown Snoqualmie, with the undergrounding, most of those are in underground vaults.
Mm-hmm. They're in conduit.
Yeah. And it's designed, my understanding at least, because I asked a lot of questions being curious about that, is that it is designed in a way that's supposed to be floodproofed, but really? It doesn't necessarily have to be above ground, where you see issues of elevation or wanting to elevate in individual buildings so that electrical panels and that sort of thing are above the base flood elevation, which in some instances requires that you take it to a higher floor.
I think, though, in a flood, they're set to trip and just shut off in some instances. And that's what
if
I
works
thought.
Right.
But, well, I mean, you don't want
you
it
think
on.
Think about it, though. If your fiber or your conduit is buried in sand and dirt and whatever else, unless the floodwaters inundate it and wash the dirt away, it's just
it's already
wet dirt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's designed.
So the thing I was noticing, sorry, I hope I'm not changing subject to wherever somebody was here. The flood map, dated as it is, it almost suggests that the only place that you can build without having to deal with it is white.
That's right.
Yeah.
So little towns like us, from the federal's perspective, we'd be out of business.
Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate. I think FEMA doesn't think of the floodplain in the context of an entire city like we are. They think it's, you know, the backyards of a few people that are out by the river.
Yeah. At the end of the Mississippi.
There was Jim, you remember, there was a point in time where they were talking about abandoning Snoqualmie. Mm-hmm. That the ridge wasn't taken all out of the floodplain and they were going to basically tear it down.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we also had a flood event in, I want to say, 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You will tell me for sure, I'm sure, when all the claims came in. Was that 2003? When the Mexican restaurant was underwater here at the I-90 interchange and streets were flooded everywhere.
I think that restaurant actually got water in the 2009 event too.
Okay.
It was really unusual.
So, I don't know. Sign it up. We don't have a choice. The Fed's insured the loans and they're not going to give you a loan if we don't sign up for the Fed policy. There we go. Right. That's the nutshell.
There's a lot of politics. When they and you know, historically, when they initially started the program, their anticipation was exactly that communities that were that have these areas that were flood prone, that they would just naturally migrate away.
Right.
They kind of lost track of the fact that people love the places where they live, and will fight to stay there. And the recent changes in bigger waters, in particular, go back to that idea: we're not going to keep paying money for this; it should go away. You either need to do what you need to do to mitigate or go away. So it's leaving communities like Snoqualmie, like North Bend, in a place where we're kind of having to defend the space that we have, which is why every time we see a llama come through in Silver Creek, I do a little bit of a dance. And it makes me so happy when I see a llama. Because it's like, it's what we know.
Can you
right?
put a saddle on one of those?
You know, I have, Angela, if I follow you, and I have a chair dance that we do. We get on the phone, and we're both going back and forth. So people think that we're absolutely nuts. But you find it where you can. And then you try and negotiate through the program as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Which is exactly what the city is trying to do here. In order to preserve our ability to have the community that we have within the constraints that are being placed on.
So the city is, I'm just throwing stuff out here if I can.
Mm-hmm.
But the loma that I just called a llama.
Which is funny, I'm going to tell you. It's going to become a new thing.
If I understood, because I went through this once with a rental property,
mm-hmm.
I was furious when FEMA said, gee, you're on the new color on the map now.
Right.
And the bank was saying, well, I'm sorry. Some,
we don't have a choice.
Some, you know, pardon me, $5 an hour person was telling me I had to totally rework my loan.
Mm-hmm.
So I hired a surveyor, which was the only way to fill out the document that they required. I think I spent, at the time, like $1,500 for the surveyor to just handle the whole thing and process the paperwork properly and record it properly. And I think I spent... Well, I saved, I think, a few hundred dollars on what was being proposed. So it took me about 8-9 years to make the money back that it took me to go through the process for the loma.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound accurate?
It's actually a lot faster now. That's actually one of the positive things that came out of here. Is that because because they're encouraging people to get elevation certificates, they have made that process. Most surveyors can submit them online, and as long as there's no issues with the information. We actually had one that came back in 3 days.
And the survey cost was?
$600 and $200 to complete the Loma app.
This is why I've asked these questions. Think about this. We're talking about our citizens. Mm-hmm. We're talking about their flood insurance. Mm-hmm. It'd be a great community service for us as a city to say, look, we can do this or we can do this. On the one hand, we sign up for everything they ask us to. On the other hand, we make arrangements with survey engineers to do a whole lot of Lomas.
Not everyone's going to get them.
We're active is getting involved in with the mapping updates.
Right. And that could change too. If they increase the base flood elevation, there are a number of properties that have gotten Lomas that have gotten that based on being like an inch or 2 inches above if they increase the BFE. So it is going to require that the community be very active in response to any full remapping. The map that is pending right now, there are very minimal changes. On that. It's really just making it work with this new D-firm idea they've got. So make it fit with all the digital stuff and then correcting a few errors here and there. So you don't know when you look at the difference, there's like some minor changes when you do an overlay.
Didn't the work at the walls help in lowering our flood level?
Not until they remap. It only affects the city of Snoqualmie, and according to the documentation PSC submitted, it will lower the base flood elevation within the city of Snoqualmie by approximately 8 inches.
Yeah.
So it's not been remapped yet. And until they change the flood insurance rate map, they don't look at that. It's not necessarily going to help people. You'll have some homes that are on the outskirts that may now be high enough to be out. And you will have some homes that were elevated early on that aren't quite as high that get a bit more credit because now they've rounded up and they're giving them credit for being an extra foot above. Unless there's a significant change in the map beyond that 8 inches that they were estimating, it's really not going to have, it won't have an impact on us here in North Bend. It is City of Snoqualmie only, according to what they're saying, and I honestly don't see it having a widespread impact in looking at the numbers. There are a few properties that I think will be out because they're already really close.
Thank you for all this information.
It's been awesome. If you have to sometimes tell me we have enough, you can stop because a little bit of a flood geek at this point. And it affects everybody, and that's part of it. You learn more and more out of self-defense.
I just assumed that our flows would drain more quickly than with the flood issue down the falls being resolved.
Circle River Ranch and Three Forks is, I think, an issue for us. Mm-hmm. That's one of the... when we have high water events, I drive around, particularly since the work at the falls, to try and... Because there are some places that just don't fill the same way. To see, and Circle River Ranch is taking on a lot more water. The last two kind of high water events where I went out, there was water in places over there that I had not seen water before, actually in lower clocked events. So when we look at where they actually measure it, Macon County, when you can pull it up and look at the numbers on the gauges. And I'm not sure what's going on there, except that the gravel bar, you can see it visually, the gravel bar as it exits into Three Forks is getting higher and higher and higher and higher. And there's quite a bit of tree debris that's kind of getting snagged down there. So I don't know how much that's playing a role.
In our floodplain management, we talked about clearing some of the debris from the rivers, and who exactly would that?
The county, and they're working on that. Mm-hmm. So they've prepared a South Fork mitigation plan specific to the South Fork, where they're looking at dredging certain areas, mm-hmm. other implementation based on what's the best bang for your buck.
How does that information get translated to FEMA for future mapping? Yeah. Nothing?
Mm-hmm. After they collect premiums for 10 years.
In general, just in to that question, in general, they're going to ignore any man-made interventions. So dredging, as far as I'm concerned, they're not going to take that into account. It's not a permanent thing. And they're increasingly not even paying attention to levees and dike systems because they fail. They're seeing them fail in 100-year events because if they're not consistently maintained at the highest possible level,
none of our levees currently are certified.
And that's been a long time. I remember when that was.
Is that part of the equation here, the levee system that we've not allowed?
They map as if the levees weren't there at all.
That, what's wrong with that picture? I mean, why wouldn't they factor that?
Because our levees weren't built as per, what is it, Department of Corps of Engineers.
Your guidelines, But realize those standards have changed. And what they always do in these is they apply the most current standards, the best available current science, when they look at these things. But the issue with this is actually it goes back. People blame the flood where they broke through on one side. But this is actually something that's been ongoing for a lot longer than that.
The theory goes the county stopped allowing the dikes to be maintained and would rather have the rural areas remain rural than agriculture rather than have the dikes actually serve a purpose. They were actually pretty darn good flood preventers back in those days.
Well, there's several places now.
Things were being done.
They're flood preventers for one entity while it increases the flow and the speed and causes issues.
And this is what we're seeing in Circle River is a lot of it is that if you think about the system kind of stops, you have it come through, and then it hits, and all that water that's kind of compressed goes out into Circle River that doesn't have it. Mm-hmm. So you have an increased damage to the banks, and so there's kind of these downstream impacts that they're looking at more. Of course, they didn't look at that for the Lower Valley, but when they did the work at Falls, but that's on a different level. The federal government made that decision, actually.
But the iteration of allowing the levies to not factor because they're not, the money's not being spent to maintain them. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the downstream conversation, but there's a city here already.
Yeah.
Well, partly also I understand that levies aren't very effective here, and that the groundwater is big as a factor, so it just kind of floats coming up the levee.
Because of the way they were constructed.
Right. Well, there's several areas now where they're actually holding back the river. I mean, you can walk along the river's edge, and if it wasn't for the levee that's there, it would change the way the river flowed. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Interesting. Let me go back to school on this.
Oh, there's not a lot out there about it. But in general, it's kind of something they've been ignoring. There's a choice up there that if it's man-made intervention on natural systems that they're not going to give credit to.
Well, the money's getting moved around to higher foundations for people's properties.
Long-term is their idea. Just we know that those will fail if we do this, those will be up in the air, and there should be less damage. Difference in philosophy.
So, Mike, I found it real valuable when we did our GIS studies that we had our GIS map guy come to the Planning Commission meeting. When we get to these eventual updates in the next go-around, could we get the Pertit consultant to come and speak to those?
Yeah.
And that way we have an opportunity to ask our questions.
Yeah,
that would be very helpful. Okay.
I think we renamed these to the Elizabeth Amendments.
Anything on our municipal code floodplain development regulations?
I congratulate the staff on this particular effort.
Just wanted to move it through, make sure we're meeting our deadline.
Yeah. Well, with that, I will ask for anything for good of the order for the commission. I will share one. At the May 3rd City Council meeting, the City Council passed the franchise utility and street lighting changes that we did, including the 3,000 Kelvin temperature reading. And I believe Somebody rejoiced over LED being the standard, and I want to say it was Martin did that verbal comment. So, well done, Planning Commission.
It's an interesting dynamic to look at the council meetings. I think the mayor talked about it at the chamber luncheon about they've had a large variety of meetings and off-site get-togethers and more than I've heard before in the past. There's the dynamic is so marked right now with young, energetic commissioners and council members, I mean, and the old guard still. And so it's almost palpable that the generational gap there. And they're trying their hardest to get together, and just anything they can do to have a kumbaya moment, they reach for, because it's just hard. But I do feel that the comments they're making now are more collaborative. Before, they were pretty much just independent views and not really worked through as a group. I think they're doing better at that, which means things we do will be taken more seriously and more in a collaborative way, too. I felt like for a while, whatever we did was just basically at the wall. I don't feel that way.
Well, I'll say that you're all welcome to come to the city council meetings. I think it's important when we feel strongly or that we want to talk to the issues that we discuss, that they listen to what we have to say and they take our opinions. So more of us that can come, the better. Right? Anything else for good of the order? Well, then.
Motion to adjourn.
We got a motion to adjourn by Mr. Lucky.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Heller. All those in favor of adjourning say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We are adjourned. It is
8:16.
Time to go.
Wait for a moment.